I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Independence, Missouri. Please join me as we visit with Alan Carr in Independence. You're in Independence now. Originally, you were with Visit Kansas City, I think.
That's right. Now I'm working with a lot of great destinations, and Independence is one of those. A great historical destination where you can really retrace the footsteps of American history.
It really is a kind of a portal and a gateway and presidential.
That's right. Independence is the hometown of Harry S. Truman, one of our great presidents. A lot of great history here. We're at the Truman Library right now, and you can explore his presidency. You can also visit the home that he lived before and after his presidency. It's a National Park Service site, great location. And then there's a lot of Truman sites throughout town. So if you really want to delve into and understand what's behind a president and his life, you can follow the Truman Walking Trail. The drugstore when he was a boy where he used to work is still open, and you can go and get a soda at the soda fountain there.
I've talked to locals from Independence that remember when they were kids watching former President Truman walk around town, walk to and from work.
Absolutely. You know, he was a man of the people, and he lived in Independence after he was president. He would actually come to the library. He had a working office here, and he would walk around town after he was president. He liked to get out and walk, and he liked to get to know the people, to know his neighbors, and you really get that sense of community here at Independence.
And I think another cool connect or disconnect is that Harry Truman actually, after he retired from presidency, that this was his office, and he would come down here to the presidential library and work.
That's right. This was where he worked. He came down each day. He would walk down from his house a lot of days if it was nice. He maintained a working office here, which is now open for tours. You can go in and tour as part of the presidential library, and you can see what he worked on, what things were important to him after his presidency.
Another aspect of Independence that I think is really cool is that this was truly a portal to the westward migration. You have some living evidence of that.
That's right. You know, not only is it the 50s history with Harry Truman, but we go back to the Wild West and the opening of the West. Independence was actually the starting point for the California, Oregon, and Santa Fe trails. So the National Frontier Trails Museum is here, and you can explore that history. You can take a wagon ride around the square and see what people would have experienced. We actually have each Saturday in the summer through October, there's what we call pioneering people. So you'll encounter people. They're dressed as 1849, which is the height of the gold rush mania. So you can encounter them, and they'll talk to you like they were in 1849. So you can understand what that history was like and what it was like to be taking out to start a new life out west.
So I bet that's hugely popular with the kids.
Absolutely. You know, I think kids really love, especially from a different era, things were so different back then, but to encounter the folks in the costumes and to hear the stories of some of the things we really take for granted today, some of the basic things that in 1849 weren't so easy. You think of today that to go from Independence to California is not such a hard journey. Well, back then it really was a perilous journey, and a lot of people died along the way, and you can hear about a lot of those stories and the struggles to really settle the parts of the Western United States.
Here's one out of left field. When I talk to people and I tell people about Independence, Missouri, two of the first things, the reason you have to go there is the Hair Museum and the Puppet Museum. Talk about those two destinations. They're below the radar. They really are.
Absolutely. You know, in Independence, it's all about unique people that really make up the story of Independence. Leila's Hair Museum is this great collection of hair art. So she collects hair art, which was something that was very popular in the Victorian era. So she has hair samples from famous people. She has works of art, bracelets and jewelry and different things that were created with actual human hair. And she celebrates hair, which was something that was actually used as art for a time.
And there's that genealogical element to the hair, too.
Absolutely. And then the Puppetry Arts Institute is a great place that celebrates puppetry, and they have some historical puppets from the Hazel Rollins collection that really chronicle the history of puppets, and so they do puppet shows for the kids, but you can also learn about the history of puppets, and it's a great little hidden gem here in Independence.
And as I recall, she is the foremost expert and has the greatest collection of Pinocchio ephemera in America.
I think you're right. Yeah, there's some great hidden gems there at the museum. A lot to check out here in Independence, where, like I said, you can learn about the famous people and really retrace the steps of American history.
Alan Carr, thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
For further information, is there a website or a portal?
If you'd like to learn more, you can go to visitindependence.com.
Kansas City, Missouri, and the surrounding towns have played a seminal role in defining the American experience. Join me as we visit with Diane Hoke, the executive director of the Puppetry Arts Institute, where she shares information and insights about the world's largest collection of Pinocchio ephemera and an incredible array of puppets and marionettes from around the world. This is a place where you'll also learn the inside story of Pinocchio and the fact that in the original version written in the 1880s, Pinocchio was not a nice guy at all. And when Jiminy Cricket started bothering Pinocchio in the original story, he turned around and clubbed him to death with a sledgehammer.
I'm Diane Hauck, and we're in Independence, Missouri.
Tell us exactly what this is.
Well, there are other puppetry centers all over the United States. Each one has its own characteristics, what they do.
In addition to truly being an institute of puppetry, I would have to say that this is a world headquarters for Pinocchio. I mean, Pinocchio alone, I can't imagine a greater, broader collection of Pinocchio stuff.
As I say, many of the puppeteers, naturally, they go to looking at Pinocchio. So we've been loaned so many wonderful things by other collectors, or we wouldn't have this, because this isn't all ours. Mm-hmm. That story, of course, changed quite a bit from when it was written originally in Italy to what Disney did with it. You know, it was written as a serial for a children's magazine. We wanted them to see what it looked like originally when they wrote the book. And then, of course, the American version, the Disney Pinocchio, so that the children all say, "He looks weird." And one boy said, "He's dressed like a girl." But that's kind of the way he was. The story of Pinocchio was 130 years old last year. And the Italians, they sent out a call to artists to redesign Pinocchio. And they had 470 artists who responded. And these are some of the postcards from the winners who were picked to be in this man's gallery. So all of these were done by Italian artists. This one is really kind of weird, as the kids would say. Fun to see. Then we have lots of books that show how the story changed. One of the scenes that I like to talk about is in the real book, the cricket says, "Pinocchio, you're just a puppet. You're just a wooden head." And that makes him mad. And he picks up a wooden mallet and he throws it at the cricket that's on the wall and kills it. Now, of course, in the Disney version, it becomes his conscience. Disney wouldn't have had the cricket killed. I always read that part of each book that I see to see how did that translator handle it. Some of them just say, "The cricket crawled away." Others say, "The cricket crawled into the forest." This was done by Tony Sarg, and he was the man who is called the father of American puppetry often. And he was the man who created the first balloons for the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. He started out with the puppet idea with sticks underneath the balloons, and that wasn't working. And then he thought of strings on marionettes and kind of evolved from that.
Diane Hoke, such a pleasure and an honor to come to the Puppetry Art Institute in Missouri. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming. Appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. For further information, somebody wanted to find out more about the Puppetry Arts Institute.
Well, on the web, we're at www.hazel.org. Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Join us in Independence, Missouri at the Harry S. Truman Presidential Library. Independence, Missouri, the home of President Harry S. Truman. Right now, we're with Donna Denslow, Marketing and Sales Manager at the Harry S. Truman Presidential Library in Independence, Missouri. Hi, Donna.
Welcome to the Truman Museum and Library.
What a pleasant surprise. We just came from his home. which was a very touching experience in itself.
Right. We kind of work hand in hand with the National Park Service. I mean, they've got the Truman Home, and as the National Archives, we have the Presidential Library and Museum.
And you're under your own auspices, which is the National Archives and Records Administration.
Yes, we are. There's actually about 13 presidential libraries that are part of the National Archives.
When was Harry Truman's library built?
Truman's library was opened in 1957, so we're over 50 years old. It was actually the first library that was created from the 1955 Presidential Libraries Act.
A little aside, what does S stand for in Harry S. Truman?
We probably get that question every single day.
Mm-hmm.
The S doesn't really stand for any one name. I mean, most people's middle name, it does stand for something. But the S in Truman's middle name was a compromise. It stood for both of his grandfathers, actually. Solomon Young and Anderson Ship Truman were his two grandfathers.
So he did not have a formal middle name then?
He did not.
The other interesting thing that I just learned is that he was one of the only ex-presidents who used his library as his real office and conducted his paperwork and archival stuff himself here.
That's absolutely true. He built what we refer to as his working office in the Truman Library and Museum, and he came to that office and worked every day. I mean, he walked the distance here from the Truman Home when it was well known to come out and talk to school children about the role of being president. People still have great memories today who actually visited the museum and actually had a chance to experience seeing him.
Another little Truman aside that I find very touching is once he retired and Bess and Harry lived in their little home down the street, he would just go for walks around town by himself, sans Secret Service.
Yeah, no, you know, he was just an average man. He came from humble beginnings and, you know, being in Washington never changed him. When he came back to Independence, it was like he never left. He just kind of picked up and was still Mr. Truman.
Tell us about some of your favorite Truman quotes.
Probably the most famous one is, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. And then the buck stops here. It's a phrase, too, and a lot of political individuals today use that phrase, as did Truman. I do a lot of the merchandise in our museum stores, so I've used some quotes there. And probably the one that I've used most recently is, if I can get it straight, every reader doesn't have to be a leader, but every leader should be a reader. And if you know your history, Truman read an awful lot of books.
And let's add another little Truman aside, and that is that he never went to college. So he truly is a self-taught man based on his personal reading.
That's right, his readings and in his life experiences. I mean, he worked on the farm. He was in the military. He was self-taught.
Tell us about some of the elements of the Truman Library that you're most proud of. What would be the things that you would make sure that we saw?
The one that comes to mind is our replica of his Oval Office. And the reason I say that is because about 10 years before he passed away, he recorded a message about his Oval Office. And so when visitors step inside, Truman starts talking to them and telling them about the contents of the Oval Office. And I just think that's wonderful, you know, since he's been gone for a long time. And I think that's wonderful for people today to be able to step in there and hear his voice.
We've been speaking with Donna Denslow at the Harry S. Truman Presidential Library. Cosmetologist Leala Cahoon started collecting hair in 1949. Not simply hair, but hair wreaths, rings, bracelets, and more. Hair art served as a primary visual source for family genealogies before the advent of photography. Leala has collected thousands of hair wreaths, hair jewelry, and more over the past half century, including hair from Elvis Presley, George Washington, JFK, and more. The collection, showcased at Leala's Hair Museum in Independence, Missouri, is the only facility in the United States dedicated solely to hair as art, and it is one of only two known hair museums in the world. The other one is located in a cave in Turkey.
Give me a head with hair, long, beautiful hair, shining, gleaming, streaming.
My name is Leala Cahoon, and you're in Independence, Missouri.
And where are we exactly?
You're at Leala's Hair Museum, the only one in the whole world.
Very cool. Tell us about hair and how it became art.
Hair is the thing that has been around as long as the body has been here. So I have traced this art form to the 15th century, so it's a real old art form.
Tell us, in what ways did they turn hair into art?
It's genealogy done with human hair. Before the camera was invented, they used the hair and made the flowers and put the person's name beside it. And that one that I'm looking at has 86 different names on it.
Family tree and hair.
A family tree and hair.
All of these flowers and all of these decorations are all made out of hair.
Yes, and they put the person's name, and then there's a number by the side of the hair, so it tells who donates the hair.
Hair does not really decay or degrade. It stays.
No, sir. I have a picture of a little girl they found in Peru recently, and she was 4,000 years old. She still had her hair, her hairstyle. The hair color was still there, and her eyelashes.
Wow, that's amazing.
Hair is the only part of the body that doesn't disintegrate. Mm-hmm. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust.
Do you want to take us around through your museum?
I'd love to.
Okay. How did all these women 100, 150 years ago learn the art?
It was passed down from one generation to the other. They didn't write books about it. And it has taken me 32 years to figure out how they made these hair wreaths. They just did it. A knitting needle, a darning needle, or a plain old sewing needle, and then counted the hairs. I remember as a kid when I was growing up, my grandmother used to watch someone and she'd say, oh, she doesn't have the nerve to count hairs. And I didn't know what grandma meant, and now I do. Mm-hmm. And so it's time consuming. You're counting hairs. They were making the flowers. If you're going to make a daisy with 9 petals, then you would count out how many hairs that you're going to use for one petal. And since nature is uneven, 9 or 11, then you'd count out that many more piles of hair with the same number of hairs. By 1930, they started doing this type of art. These are postcards that went through the mail.
So they're basically postcards with little wigs on them.
Yes. You would have your picture taken, put your own hair on there, and then mail it. See, they all have a stamp on the back and an address.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been absolutely wonderful. What a pleasure to come to your museum.
Thank you. Never get tired of talking about it. Never get tired of collecting more. My name is Leila Cahoon. I'm in Independence, Missouri, 1333 South Nolan Road. I'm on the internet. You can find Leila's Hair Museum.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com. Our associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, and Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.